Hello and welcome to the Chooseify Radio Podcast. Today on the show, we're going to be discussing this past week's episode with Ryan Carson from Treehouse, and in particular, dialing in on the pros and cons of skipping the college degree in favor of an online certificate program with job placement. Then we open it up to the community for their feedback and crowdsource the remainder of the show. Todd calls in to share his life hacks on the roads as he sells his home and takes his dog with him. Neil calls in to discuss internships and how his choices impact his engineering hiring process. And Kevin from Sydney, Australia, would like to comment on the power of property investments as a way to use leverage more safely, plus his dilemma of getting his wife on board. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Brad, as I alluded to, a lot of good stuff to get into today. But I think before we do that, you just got back from Omaha from the Berkshire Hathaway meetup. Frankly, I'm itching to get all the details. Like, this is something that I was really excited about for you. There's a little bit of fear of missing out in me and like this now desire to do it next year to make up for it. But how was it?
Jonathan, it was amazing. It really was. I'm kind of still on a high from the weekend. It was just a wonderful time, both being there at this Woodstock of capitalism, as they kind of jokingly refer to it as. I mean, there are probably somewhere in the vicinity of 50,000 Berkshire Hathaway shareholders that descend on Omaha, Nebraska that weekend. And it's just, the atmosphere is electric. It was kind of like a rock concert for the Saturday morning lineup. I mean, literally, there were tens of thousands of people lined up at 6 a.m. and before, just to get in when doors opened a couple hours later. And then it didn't even start until an hour after that. So it was this wild, wild scene of just people from all walks of life sharing this common love of basically Mr. Buffett and Munger. So and all that Berkshire Hathaway stands for. So it was really a cool time, just that part of the event. But from the FI community perspective, frankly, it was even better. It was just like the coolest weekend. We had a Choose FI meetup on Friday. I think we had probably somewhere in the vicinity of 35, 40 people there. It was just a really great time. I mean, people came from a couple hours away. Basically, anyone in the vicinity of Omaha in our Choose FI local groups came and just descended on this one little bar in Omaha. And it was just a really great time. I mean, we stayed for 3+ hours, just chatted and talked FI and talked a little bit about the podcast and things like that. And it was really pretty neat. That was the first time that I've attended a local meetup outside of the Richmond local group. And I have to tell you, Jonathan, like, this is the first of many. I mean, I think you and I were talked about this offline, just sharing my enthusiasm of this. And how do we go to more of these? Because it was so wonderful to connect with people in the audience, with like-minded individuals. Like, it was a really, really special time. And yeah, I wanted to thank Dave, the organizer, and the whole group there.
I really did have that fear of missing out as you were gone over the weekend. And I was like, I think I need to be there. Like, can we go next year? Can we still do this? But yeah, I'm on the same page with you with trying to make this a thing where maybe we can go visit a few local groups each year and hop on the road. I don't know, man. Choose FI road tour, right?
I think that would be amazing. I would absolutely love to do that. And yeah, I hear you about the FOMO of Omaha, but this is going to be an annual thing. I think
is it going to be an annual thing?
I think for sure. Like, this is a new event in the FI community, because it wasn't just us. There was actually, I hung out that whole weekend with Pete from Mr. Money Mustache, with our good friends Marla and Bianca of Miss Mizuma fame, and Michael from this website Uncommon Dream, and Sun Wu and William, the moderators of our Facebook group. Like, it was just this really cool time, and not to mention our wonderful hosts, Ross and Karen. So it was just this really great time, and now it's going to expand from there, because I think every single one of us who were there this weekend are coming back. I know Carl and Mindy from 1500 Days were there as well. We didn't see quite as much of them, but they're coming back every single year. So yeah, I mean, I think we've got a new event in the FI community, Jonathan.
All right, dude, I'm putting it on the calendar. Can I give you my updates? I have a few, nothing like that, but they're decent.
Let's hear it.
All right, so one is, you remember how I was complaining that my grocery bill had just gotten out of hand and that I was gonna track it?
Yeah, you said, I forget the exact amount you were spending per month, but it was much more significant than you would have imagined for two adults and a one-year-old, right?
Yeah, according to Mint, which, to be honest with you, I was not being super specific with the credit card and necessarily only putting food on the credit card and labeling it as a food expense. But according to Mint, which I track almost all of my monthly expenses on, I had tipped the scales, I believe, in February or March at over $900 on quote unquote groceries. And I was just aghast at what had possibly gone wrong there. So with that in mind, I just made a challenge for April to track every single dollar that I spent. We spent $231 on food for my family of three.
Wow. For the entire month?
For the entire month.
How is that even possible? That's, wow, that's amazing. Do tell.
A $700 raise just by tracking it. Well, one was that I was being indiscriminate with my categories in Mint. So like I was putting home supplies on there that was getting factored into it, and maybe a few other random purchases that really did not count towards the food budget. So that was part of like a what would that be? Is that a false negative, Brad? I think it's a false negative or false positive, but it's definitely false. It's not indicative of what I was actually spending on food. So I got rid of that. That may have carved off maybe $75 to $100. Two is there were a couple of special events that were like one-off type deals where you had people to your home. So I could basically get rid of maybe another $100 from a couple different big events, including my birthday that had fallen into that occasion, having some family over. So that was another $100. Now from there though, then it actually comes down to basically food and being intentional. And what I found is, because I had bought stuff in Costco, I had an excessive supply of certain items and not enough of others, which was forcing me to go back to Costco. Now, I truly believe that if you have a plan, you can crush the food game at Costco. But if you don't, they have a plan too, and they will win. So you end up with, you know, basically the minimum purchase price at Costco for an item is $10. You end up with 20 items, and now suddenly you have spent $200 on that one trip at Costco. Something doesn't last. You go back to Costco, but you don't just reshop for the one item you need. You do another full run. And so I had ended up with excessive amounts. Knowing that I had that in my catalog, the key is then not to let it go to waste. And I already knew this. I try not to buy things that I know that are going to go bad before I get a chance to eat them. So the things that we had bulked up on, we still had. But the problem was we were continuing to go back to the well before we had burned through all of that back catalog. So part of the reason I was able to get my food budget so low is we went through all of our pantries and we figured out a way to use all of those different items. The other thing I did is I just went right across the street to Aldi's, which, Brad, I am pretty sure, like, I have now conducted a scientific study and I'm pretty sure it's impossible to spend more than $100 at Aldi's. I've made 5 attempts. I have filled up my cart to the point of breaking, and the most I spent at Aldi's was $98. It blows my mind how much less expensive it is, because while the average cost per item at Costco may be $9 or $10, and obviously you get a lot more, the average cost per item at Aldi's is like less than $3, less than $2. It's something truly absurd, and you fill up your cart and somehow you're still coming home from less. The other thing is I limited my ingredient options. Knowing that I was doing the skinny waist fat wallet, I limited my meal choices to things that fit inside that plan. So we have talked about leaning heavily on repetition. We did that. And I think those factors combined, only going to the grocery store like once a week, or I think we only ended up going essentially 3 times over the month of April, using repetition and focusing on stuff that I would actually eat and using all of the back food, you know, the food that we'd accumulated that was still sitting in the pantry. We crushed this thing. $231 total food expenditure, family of three.
That's amazing. Yeah, lots of really good takeaways, I would say, there for the audience, especially what you just summarized. I wonder how much of it is, of course, I put my accountant's hat on first and wondering how much of this is like an accountant's issue of like, you purchased the food beforehand, like you're saying, you burned through some of that previous supply. I guess it would be interesting, and I think you talked about this on the Started Up podcast that you were recently on, about like looking at this over maybe a 3 or 4 month period. I'd be curious to see if it smooths out, like if you could actually get down to what you're consuming, like the dollars that you're consuming, because it's not necessarily, and I think you're alluding to this, it's not necessarily the perfect metric just to look at what you spent, because as you're saying, like you're consuming things from prior months, but most importantly, the lessons you're talking about repetition, about not going to the store too many times, about using similar, maybe low cost ingredients, going to Aldi. I mean, these are the brilliant takeaways, but you know, of course my dopey accountant's brain goes to the accounting issue first. But yeah, I'd be curious just to hear on an ongoing basis, what's May and then what's June? That'll be pretty cool if you don't mind updating us.
And I certainly will. And I think I've already thrown away one receipt because I was so excited about my numbers, I didn't look it forward, but I'll try to go back on Mint and track it. But I think the guiding light here, it always comes back to the cost per serving per person, right? So that $2 per person per meal, if that is your guiding light, then it does become more sustainable. It becomes easier. In fact, in the Skinny Waist Fat Wallet video that I released recently, one of those meals that I ate for dinner basically 3 or 4 nights, you know, over the last month was this chicken chili that I made, the Southwest chicken chili using the Instapot. And my cost per serving with those meals was somewhere in between $90 to $1.30 per serving. For those meals. And when that is taking up one third of your meals per day for a week, it drives the cost for your family, for your food budget down, down, down. I mean, it's really hard to escape the inexorable economics of $1.30 per person per meal.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. And yeah, so you've mentioned the YouTube series and you've talked about, you kind of loosely said tipping the scales before in terms of dollars, but I'm curious to hear A, how the video series is going, and B, how your weight loss journey is going.
Yeah, with the video series, I am so glad that I waited until we had a little bit of a recording break to go ahead and start focusing on that, because that is just feeding into my need to get everything perfect and to make everything high production quality. And it takes way more time than I ever could have possibly imagined. So many more factors go into creating a YouTube video than really, honestly, even a podcast. But on a results perspective, we're doing great. So I just weighed in at 179.5 or 7. So I'm down about 8 pounds from when I initially started, which is just under the 2 pounds per week. I'm kind of cruising in at 1.5 pounds a week right now, somewhere in that range. I'm definitely still on track for my goal of trying to get close to that 20 pounds. On a body fat perspective, I'm down about 3.5% body fat. I'm very excited about the trend and where it's heading, and that my motivation is still so strong. And I think it's strong because I'm holding myself accountable both on the show, you know, reporting to you basically, and also on the YouTube channel. I'm constantly thinking about it. It is the most important thing that I'm working on right now. So from that perspective, it's really going well.
That's neat. And we're definitely going to increase the production of these new YouTube videos. And I know I want to get in some of these. I think we've got some neat plans. And for anybody who wants to subscribe, just head to choosefi.tv or just choosefi.com/YouTube. Either of them will get you there. And yeah, just hit subscribe. And anytime we put out a new video, you'll be notified of it.
So Brad, let's go ahead and take a few minutes and talk about this past week's episode with Ryan Carson from Treehouse. And I guess the place that I wanted to start with this is the world is changing, and we expressed back on that episode with Vicky Robin that the opportunity cost of college, the necessity of college, the economics of going to college is drastically changing. I couldn't really prove that out. I sensed it. I see the dilemma with kids, you know, my age or younger that have come out of school and frankly just don't have the job opportunities waiting for them that they thought were going to be guaranteed. The economics, it's radically shifting. And I think all of us are grappling with what to do about that. How do we solve this problem? Is it that everybody gets to go to college for free? Does that solve the problem? And if that's the answer, I'm okay with that. But I as I've expressed in previous shows, I really don't think it is. I think it actually makes the problem worse. And in light of that, I was desperate to find, or at least look for a solution to this, find out what people that are optimizing their life have figured out, find out, is there another way, and then highlight that so other people can be exposed to it. That's what this episode was about for me.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one with Ryan Carson. I want to make it clear, though, from the outset here, we are certainly not anti-college. And I personally went to a four-year college, and I'm very pleased with the degree that I got. I think even though I kind of rag on being an accountant and being a tax accountant specifically, I think it taught me great lessons that I've taken throughout my entire adult life and certainly into starting my own businesses. So, and also the add-on effects of certainly of meeting people and having a network. I mean, there are lots of good positive aspects of college. So this is not the anti-college show, just to make that clear. But that said, the world is changing. And people in the FI community think a little bit differently than the next guy. And I think we like to be ahead of trends, right? And see these things before it becomes obvious to everyone in society. And I think this is one of those instances where many people, we talk about second generation FI all the time. There are many people in our community who have kids that are getting ready to go to college that are a couple years away, or in my case, 8 or so years away, which is kind of a blink of an eye in the grand cosmic scheme of things. And we realize, oh, wow, this is coming. And we need to figure out what makes sense, because you're talking huge dollar figures. So I think what I implore all of you is to just think about this deeply. Think about what value there is, and not just go on that default setting, that unconscious, oh, of course everyone goes there. It's just think a little bit differently, whether it's a trade job that as we commonly understand them, whether it's a trade job in this coding, as Ryan called it, whether it's thinking about community college, like we mentioned that, Jonathan, you took great advantage of for a couple of years and saved a significant amount of expense on a four-year degree that you still got. If it might mean going after college scholarships that you otherwise might not have and trying to earn money that way for college. So there are lots of different options, but I implore you to really look into them and to think deeply about what makes sense for you and your family, and to also then think about this concept of opportunity cost. And Jonathan, I know you love to talk about this, so I won't steal your thunder, but this is 4 years of your life or your child's life or whomever's life, I guess. And that's 4 years where you're spending a significant amount of money to go to this university and you're not earning an income, right? So there's that big delta there that represents the opportunity cost. So there's lots of factors to consider, but I just asked you to consider them basically.
And the thing that you said that really stood out to me is this idea of lots of different options. And that is my biggest gripe, is that it seems like as a society, we are pushing the fact that there are not a lot of different options. There is one option. Everybody needs to go to college. And I'm fine with that. If you make that choice, I'm fine with that. I hope you crush the game. But I think that, again, I'm seeing so many people that aren't, you know, and they're being told that this is what you have to do. You have to do this. And I think that, again, like as you pointed out, for a community of people that is trying to stay one step ahead of the curve, if you can now view it as an a la carte option, right? As a journey, a pick your own adventure journey, where you don't have to do the one thing that society tells you to do or the Choose FI radio podcast tells you that you have to do. You get to pick based on your own unique characteristics, your own skill sets, your own interest. You get to pick a path. And you know what? They all get you to FI. You just need to pick the one that works for the life that you want to live. That's all we're trying to do, is just present you with these different options. And the numbers that Ryan mentioned, as you pointed out on the show, if anything, they seem conservative. I mean, just the simple math of being able to start at a much earlier age without incurring the debt, without then incurring the years that you have to pay back the debt, and then having a job that beats the whole median income game at such a young age, you'd be very hard pressed to outperform that. And if along the way, as you're looking into this, you realize this is something that I actually would love to do. I'm the guy that spends all my time on YouTube trying to add an additional talent to my stack. I spend the extra time researching a new skill set that will allow me to solve a specific problem. If that's you, that's what grabs your interest, then this could be a great option for you.
Yeah, and it does seem like this particular industry, this coding, as Ryan described it as this trade skill, it does seem like the perfect option there, because you're coming out with a significant income, right? He's talking within relatively short order, getting a job that might pay you $55,000 or somewhere in that vicinity. I know many college graduates who are not earning that money. So that sounds pretty darn good to me. And sure, this is not, again, not an anti-college show. So there are many college graduates coming out with finance jobs or investment banking jobs that are paying them well over $55,000. And those people would probably argue, okay, this was a great path for me. So again, it's not anti-college. It's just what makes sense for your life. So I think if you are not going to college and you're getting a job making minimum wage, well, that's not probably a great alternative. And all Ryan's fancy numbers are going to look pretty preposterous. Clearly, we're not talking about that. So hopefully everybody understands that. We're talking about this very specific case where, according to Ryan, people are coming out making $55,000 in fairly short order. So like those numbers make real intuitive sense to me. And yeah, I mean, if that's plausible, and I assume certainly that coding isn't the only industry that you can do this in. We've had a couple of voicemails over the past year of people who have similar pay scales in wildly different careers. And Jonathan, I think that's something you and I need to put together at some point, a list of these. I think that would be a neat kind of repository of information for our community, right?
I would love that. I'm actually writing to make a note of that, to do that over the next couple months. I absolutely love that. And the scholarships too, like not just the job opportunities, but the different scholarship opportunities, creating a portfolio that people can just think about as they're getting closer to needing these. You know, I think one of the best things that we can do for this particular episode is to almost get out of the way and read feedback from the community on this particular episode and give a chance to bring the possible criticisms and the approvals of this podcast to light. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do.
Okay. So John said, as someone that recently graduated with a computer science degree, I will say that the vast majority of classes do not prepare you in any way for a career using your skills. As mentioned in the podcast, many of the languages taught are not used today as much as they used to be. Having the latest trending language as a skill set gives you a huge advantage to being marketable to employers. However, I do think that most big companies are still looking for a degree to hire you. But if you can get an entry-level position for 2 to 3 years, they will consider your experience as an adequate acceptance. I hope in the coming years, more companies will consider a coding skill set more valued than a degree, because frankly, it makes more sense in the real world if you actually know how to do your job rather than having a piece of paper. I'm not familiar with the curriculum these online alternatives offer, but I hope they include things such as methodologies and, in parentheses, agile. I actually don't know what that means, but I'll leave that to people in the audience to do, and other real world best practices to set you up for the workplace. And he had some other insight. He said, right out of college, people are making $70,000 to $75,000 at my company. And after 2 years, you're up in the $90,000 to $95,000 range. So those are real economics, real numbers to tie to this. And I think it adds value. Brad, what are your thoughts about this idea of, you get this certificate, this online certificate from Treehouse, and you have the skill set, but you're applying for the job and the companies want a degree. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because as Ryan said in the episode, employers want to know you can do the work, not where you went to college. And he said Elon Musk agrees. And you know, that's just one anecdote, obviously. But yeah, I mean, if those are the unfortunate realities, then we always have to deal with reality as it is. In this case, one person is not going to change the game. But I suspect, based on what Ryan's saying, there are, especially in this one particular industry, there are many employers who do hire people as long as they can prove they can do the work. So I think that's kind of the background that I would look at, is find these employers and prove to them, hey, sure, I may not have a fancy degree, but here's my GitHub information, and here's what I've proven that I can do in these languages across the board. The proof is in the pudding, right?
Yeah. And I think it's even more than that. You know, I think one of the things that when you're going through an episode, one of the things we may have glossed over and actually probably didn't do a good enough job highlighting is the fact that Ryan is tackling this from both sides with Treehouse. He is not just a job training facility. They're trying to act as a job placement facility. So they're kind of double ending this. They're going to the person that wants to learn the skills, but they're also going to, I mean, we described this 900,000 jobs in America alone that need to be filled with these coding positions, and employers can't get them. I think we're almost going too quickly to that. Well, how do I get a job? They're actually trying to solve that by going directly to the employer. And we didn't talk about this, but I've heard them talk about it on another podcast. He mentioned it very briefly on the show that they have set something up with the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. What they're basically doing is they're setting up these apprenticeship programs where they're partnering with major, major companies and training the people. They have job ready skills, and then they're putting them in this almost like apprenticeship type deal, working in a actual job, kind of giving them that internship where then the company has the option to then hire them. You've already done an in round around this idea of having to get a degree. You've bypassed that. You're going straight to the source. And instead of someone using the degree as a gatekeeper to filter out people that may not be a good fit for your company environment, you are now benefiting from them being right there, them doing the work on time, them showing you how they can interact with the other people that are in that environment, their ability to be a part of a team. Your ability to be a part of the team is probably the most valuable thing you can bring to a company once you get past the gatekeeper that may or may not say your degree. And that's what Treehouse is highlighting. They realize that if they're going to have long-term traction, if they're going to be a viable model into the future, they can't just solve the pipeline funnel. They've got to get employers to buy into it. And that is what he's doing. I know for a fact that they've reached out to Nike. Boys and Girls Club obviously is on the one end, Nike's on the other, and they have many more of these partnerships that they are actually setting up. And while this may be an early adoption model, well, guess what? The people that get in early to a company like this and get this skill set are going to have a very easy time finding that jobs, as long as they can also handle that team building aspect, being a part of a team, interacting with other people. Let's not downplay that. That is critical, but it goes back to some of what we were talking about. Just be a likable person. You know, do what you can for others. Network in a positive way. You can't just leave that just because now you have this skill set. You still have to interact with other people. But if you can do the job and you can interact with people, and Treehouse has gotten rid of the degree requirement by doing an end run around to the actual employer, I think you're going to be in great shape.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice, Jonathan, for sure. And I want to make it clear here, just as an aside, that this is not an advertisement for Treehouse in any way, shape, or form. We talked actually recently on, I think, the most recent Friday Roundup about how to make money online. And I think, Jonathan, our overriding thing was you need to establish trust. And I think we have that with our audience. But I always want to make things clear. If we ever earn money from anything, we tell you guys about it. So that's kind of how we roll here. We would never bring someone on, a CEO of a Treehouse, or a couple of weeks ago, we had Chris Hutchins from Grove, and he's the CEO there. We're earning nothing from this. So we're constantly bombarded. Like, you guys can't even imagine how many pitches we get from CEOs of this company, that company, just to come on the podcast and just basically hawk their product. We turn down 99% of them. It's just these rare instances where we think these companies are solving problems that we've seen and that we've talked about. This is perfect. These two examples of Grove, where we've talked as recently as January with the CFPs inside our own community about how to get financial plans and the cost of them lowered, right? So Grove came in and did this. That was the perfect person to talk to, especially because Chris is in the FI community. And now Ryan Carson here has this great way as this college hack, basically, which is what we've talked about for months and months and months. So it was just a neat opportunity to really speak to the sources here. So trust is really important to us. And I just always want to be clear. If we're ever making money from something, we will tell you. And I assure you, we are making nothing from both those companies.
But it's even more than that. I think it's important to people know that we don't just bring on companies that we can profit from. You know, I think if the guiding light is solve a problem, you start with that. And sometimes there will be ways to make money. You will be able to align yourself and you will to make profit off it. And by using disclosure, as you pointed out, that is exactly what we will do. But being able to make money on something is not the guiding light for talking about a service. It's, does it serve our community? Does it solve a problem? This absolutely took care of that.
Yeah, without a doubt. And of course, making money is not evil. Like you, Jonathan, you fell in love with this M1 Finance recently, and we talked about it for a couple minutes on a Friday Roundup, and you had hopped on the phone with their CEO and just got all this information, and like you and your Jonathan style were rip-roaring excited about this, and it was awesome. And of course, if we have an affiliate link, we'd be stupid not to mention it, right? But of course, we mentioned, hey, this is an affiliate link. So that's something I feel very, very comfortable with. So making money is not a problem. It's just being upfront and honest with people. And I believe that the audience trusts in us.
And Brad, as we're saying this, I'm thinking to myself, we need to call this episode Disclosure.
Ooh, that sounds very interesting. I always defer to you to the episode title. So, well, I'm not sure I love that 100%. It's kind of cool.
All right. It's kind of clickbait, but I got a better one for you. Instead of calling it that, let's call it the Choose FI Scholarship. And let me tell you why. Not only are we not profiting from this episode that we did with Treehouse, we actually want to give back to the community by this episode. And we had talked about this online, and I kind of teased it at the end of last episode. We want to sponsor someone to take this Treehouse course and use it to get an amazing, amazing job. And we want to chronicle your journey. So Brad and I have decided to go ahead and buy a seat at the Treehouse table for someone to get this full experience. And this has been like a long-term goal of ours to somehow figure out a way to start a ChooseFI scholarship fund. And what we want to do is find a way to give back essentially to you guys, to our community, and to these ideas that we're putting out there. We don't want to just talk about them. We want to hopefully help build them and watch them grow into reality. So we actually are buying out of our own pockets, our own personal money. We are buying one full seat at the Treehouse table for an individual to take their full course. And hopefully what we'd like to see happen is them kind of report back to us on the experience. We talked to Ryan about this and he said, absolutely. And I'll make sure they have an awesome, awesome experience. So what we're going to do is we are setting up essentially a scholarship application. This is a full-on application. I'm going to get William to help me build like a web form for it. And what we're looking for is an individual that kind of understands what some of the concepts that we talked about in this episode and in the past week's episode, that is interested in pursuing this alternative career path. You know, in my mind, it would be kind of cool to have someone that is already kind of skeptical on going to college and really didn't want to go to college, but is looking for an alternate way to do things. If that was your mindset to begin with, this application, somehow we got to figure out a way to filter out people. We need someone that will actually complete the program. So in this filter, in this application, we want to know, what is the story you tell yourself about yourself, and give us some different ways that you've demonstrated grit. This isn't live right now. We're going to try and build this application out over the next couple of weeks and get it to go live, hopefully in the future. But if you're listening to this, maybe you have a child that's been on this kind of this trajectory and they were interested in coding. This is something they've expressed an interest in. I would love for you to consider filling out this application, having them fill out this application, telling us a little bit about their story and your story, and see if this can become part of the conversation. See if we can prove this out. Let's not just talk about it. Let's do it. And let's all benefit from the journey. I think, Brad, that is something that inspires me, since chills down my spine, and I would want to financially support.
Yeah, I think this is a great idea. And yeah, we've talked for a long time about setting up scholarships in some way, shape, or form, or at least aiding in people really following through on many of the things we talk about here on ChooseFI. So I think this is a perfect example. And yeah, just to kind of add to what you said before, we are certainly not prejudging the person who's going to win by any means, or the type of person and their background. So any and all people should apply if this is something you're going to follow through on. So you might be in a career and you might have been in that career for decades, but hey, you want to change. You think this Treehouse sounds interesting? Well, please apply. Please don't think this is for certain people and not for others. So we will put that together as soon as possible. And we will certainly mention it on a future Friday roundup, on our email subscriber list, and in our Facebook group. So stay tuned.
So Brad, let's go ahead and take some time and open up the rest of the show to our community, their voicemails, their questions, their ideas. This first one that I wanted to play was from Neil, and he called in to discuss internships and how his choices impacted his engineering hiring process. I think this tip can really, really get you ahead, especially if you are in college, approaching college, or if you have a child that is about to start this part of their journey as well. Let's go ahead and pull this up.
Hey, Brad and Jonathan. My name is Neil, and I've been listening to your podcast for the last month now, and you guys are doing a great job, so keep it up. I wanted to call to leave some input on internships. I know in your last episode 73, you guys went over internships a bit, and I just wanted to talk about my experiences a little bit. I guess one thing I would say is that just because there isn't a job posting for internships doesn't mean there isn't one available. When I was a freshman, I called around to as many companies as I could just to see if they would be willing to hire an intern, because most engineering firms would not hire a freshman. And one of them happened to call me back and hire me for that summer, which gave me a leg up on everyone else when we were looking for internships sophomore, junior year. So I've been lucky enough to have three different internships, all because that first one I called around to find one that wasn't necessarily posted, while all my other internships I was hired because I was the only person with internship experience. So guess that's just a quick quip as far as getting internships. I think they're really important. And employers definitely weigh more on your internships than they do on schoolwork. So thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
I mean, this is it, isn't it, Brad? It's these little details. If you look where no one else is looking, you're going to uncover opportunity.
Yeah, I love that. So it's essentially getting experience to get more experience at another internship, right? Like, it's just like this little hack that is just so cool that I never would have thought of. But yeah, that certainly would put you ahead of the game with other comparable people who were applying to, I guess, the second internship, right? But didn't have prior experience.
And I'm just thinking, to even stack onto that, sometimes you call an employer, like I was an employer and I was hiring people, and I would get people calling, asking if there was anything available. And just at that particular time that they called, the answer was a no. But 2 to 3 months later, if they had called, it would have been a resounding yes. And I'm just thinking, if you wanted to stack this, it's persistence, right? It's looking where no one's looking and then being willing to be persistent. And so I'm just thinking, if you were to stack what he just said with something like what Brad does, just automating everything and building a system in place, let's say you cold call people and you make 5 calls and none of those individuals have anything available. Well, some people would just stop there and say, oh, well, that didn't work. Let's say you called 1 company a week or 1 company every 2 weeks, and it was part of your to-do-ist, right? You put it on your to-do list and you put like a recurring reminder on there to follow up with those individual companies 2 to 3 months later, depending on what the verdict of that call was. Was it a hard no, or was it, well, I just think right now there's not really anything available. Things change, and they change really quickly. And unless you have someone on the inside, which most of us don't, then you just don't know. And so I think it's making that phone call. But then if the answer is a soft no, being willing to put it onto some sort of reminder list, because the easy way out is just to forget and move on and say it didn't work. But the more likely strategy for success is to put it on like a 2 or 3 month reminder. Go back to that well and see if something has changed.
Yeah. And you're showing that employer that you're actually interested, right? You're not just one of 1,000 people who are contacting them, but you're becoming a familiar face and you're obviously interested in that particular company, because otherwise you wouldn't be following up, right? So maybe you establish some relationship with the person that you're connecting with. You send them an email here or there. I mean, there's definitely value in that. So yeah, that's a kind of cool tip, Jonathan. I like that.
All right. Now, this next voicemail I got is from Todd, and Todd is a disabled veteran, and he called in to share his story and how he is pursuing financial independence, what it actually looks like for him. I thought this was such a valuable conversation, and it just points to the fact that FI looks incredibly different based on what it is that you want, what it is that you're pursuing. And you don't have to make the same choices as someone else, but you can choose. You can choose a life that works for you. I think this is definitely going to be a value add.
My name is Todd. A friend got me hooked on your show last summer. I have several life hacks to share. I live on an island north of Seattle. I sold my house in Georgia October 2016 and moved into a 21-foot trailer. I quit my job and got off the hamster wheel of working 60 hours a week and headed west with my dog and truck pulling my home. My brother was already living on the island in Washington. I made the journey to Washington and saw a lot of cool places around the U.S. I have been parking my camper on a lady's property on the island. Instead of paying money to park, I work in the yard for about 4 to 5 hours a week for rent. So life hack number one, eliminate the cost of paying rent or mortgage. I help a lot of people on the island. For just being kind and helping others, a friend gave me a violin. I have not played a violin since fourth grade and am very happy to start playing again. The island has free public transportation. The bus runs every 30 minutes, so I take that when needed. Life hack number two, I only fill up my truck only once a month and utilize the free public transportation. The island also has a great community food bank, and a lot of people donate food from their garden. It is not based on income, and all residents on the south side of the island are free to use the food bank. The food bank has used a point system and gives you 73 points a month. Points work like this. A bag of vegetables or fruits are 1 point each. Meat is 5 points per pound. I have adopted intermittent fasting and only eat one meal a day, dinner. Life hack number three, eliminate grocery bills. I am also a disabled veteran, so I have health care covered through the VA. Life hack number four, health care covered. My total monthly expenses are $300 a month. I have the freedom to go and come as I please. I read a lot, listen to podcasts, and hike with my dog. I go to many concerts and sporting events and spend time with my friends. Another life hack is internet is free at the library. You can also rent movies, books, and listen to music for free there also. My cell phone bill is $30 a month. My carrier is Metro PCS, and that includes internet on my phone. Metro PCS is owned by T-Mobile, so I have great coverage. I work about 10 to 20 hours a week based around my schedule and when I want to work. Having financial independence lets me tell people when I'm available to work, not the other way around. I'm 33 years old and love each day because the days are truly my time since I am not on the hamster wheel. Thank you so much, Brad and Jonathan, for all you do for the community. I appreciate the hours y'all spend on the podcast. I also love the guests y'all bring on the show. The fire is spreading, my friends.
Wow, Todd, that is amazing. I'm not sure I've ever heard of someone with a $300 per month life. Those are your total expenses, $300 per month. And you've gone about it in such a smart way. And it certainly doesn't sound like a life of deprivation to me. I mean, the way you're describing this, you read, you hike, you listen to podcasts, go to concerts, spend time with friends. It sounds like you're traveling all around this island. And as you said, you're 33 and you love the days since they're on your time. I mean, that is just a really cool outlook on life. Obviously, we could spend hours talking about all your little life hacks, but eliminating the rent or mortgage by actually providing value to the person whose land you're essentially parking on, right? Free public transportation, you spend little on gas, healthcare is covered, internet's free at the library. I mean, it's such a cool way that you've constructed this life. So you just simply don't need that much money. And now, obviously, everyone out there in the audience can't relate to $300 per month, but they can relate to these life hacks. So yeah, very, very well done. And just well done on this life that you've constructed for yourself.
But I just think, you know, there's so many people in our audience that are maybe feeling like trapped, like they can't do everything they want to do on a lifestyle of maybe $70,000 a year or $100,000 a year. I mean, you were kind of pointing to the fact that there are people that feel trapped in their lifestyle where they are making $150,000 a year. And I think kind of like what I come back to is that it's a choice. You know, you don't need to make the same choices as Todd. You don't need to make the same choices on the person that's trapped at this $100,000 a year lifestyle and just feels like they're inside this hamster wheel rat race. It is truly a choice. And what Todd has built is a portfolio of life hacks that work for him that allows him to design and live the life he wants to live now. Brad, it reminds me of that parable that of the Mexican fisherman and the investment banker. The investment banker comes down on vacation to this Mexican village. There's this small boat where the fisherman is docked. Inside the boat, the fisherman has this fish that he's just recently caught. You know, the American gives him several compliments on the quality of his fish. And then the Mexican and ask him how long it took him to catch those. The Mexican says, only a little while. Then the American asks, well, why didn't you stay out longer and you catch more fish? Why didn't you take the proceeds and invest in a bigger boat and then and hire a team and get more people underneath you? The Mexican said, well, he had enough to support his family's immediate needs. And then the American said, well, what do you do with the rest of your time? The fisherman says, I sleep late. I fish a little. I play with my children. I take siestas with my wife. I go into the village each evening where I sip wine, play guitars, you know, with my friends. I have this great, full and busy life. The American scoffs, says, I am a Harvard MBA. I can help you build this business and grow this business. The Mexican fisherman says, how long will this all take? And the American says, 15 to 20 years. And then the Mexican says, but what then? And the American laughs and says, that's the best part. Once you have reached this level of success, you can announce an IPO. You can sell your company for millions. And the Mexican says, what then? The American says, well, then you retire. You move to a small coastal village where you sleep late. You fish a little. You play with your kids. You take siestas. You stroll to the village in the evenings where you sip your wine with your buddies. That is opportunity cost. And that is what Todd is highlighting. Don't wait for the future. Design the life you want to live now. This is your one opportunity to live it out. That's how powerful this concept is. And that's why FI is a life optimization strategy to help you pick what brings you the most value. That's why we're here week after week to highlight this. And you don't need to make the same choices as me, and you don't need to make the same choices as Brad. But if you understand your options and you understand opportunity cost, you get to pick a life that works for you.
Yeah, Jonathan, you're exactly right. And yeah, I've certainly heard that parable before. I never expected to hear it on the podcast, but man, perfect timing and a really cool story and an important thing for us to really think on.
And this last voicemail that I'm playing for you this morning came from Kevin, and it's so in line with everything that we were talking about at the first part of this episode that I knew it needed to make it onto today's show.
Hey guys, it's Kevin calling from Sydney, Australia. I'm a massive fan of the show. I'm listening to it every day. I think it just makes me feel good because the content washes over me. Sometimes I feel like I need to sit there and meticulously take notes. But even if I'm not doing that and trying to find something immediately that I can action, it still makes me feel good because it makes me kind of puts me in that mental place where I want to aim for self-improvement. And I know that all the tools that you're giving me are attainable, they're accessible, and they're useful. So yeah, just an interesting insight for me on how just listening to the content makes me feel beyond the really useful parts of it, which of course are also there. My next challenge is to convince my wife of all this, that I'm not a crazy person and that FI is something that we should be pursuing, but I'm still putting my business case together there, so I'm sure that'll happen soon enough. What I just wanted to mention to you guys is property investment. So I can see that through the content you've put out so far, really you don't get too involved in investment vehicles, which I think is cool. It's probably the right approach. And, you know, it's all about index funds from you guys, low cost, which I'm totally on board with. I think for me, looking at my next steps, the only thing with index funds is there's no leverage at all, right? You can get margin loans, but they're really so dangerous, subject to margin calls and so on. With property, if you really want to crank things up, if you want to leverage into some sort of future investment, then really property is that only answer beyond, you know, creating businesses and that kind of stuff. So I would just ask you guys, because there's so few sources out there that are unbiased, you know, they're all spruikers, they're all people or mortgage brokers or whoever who are trying to get you to buy property. They've got a vested interest. I trust you guys hugely because there's no vested interest, which is really so rare and particularly rare when it comes to property. In fact, I'm just not seeing it anywhere. So if you guys were to look into property some more, put together some content on that in terms of getting a rental properties and, you know, getting into property from an investment perspective, I think that would hold huge weight. It would be enormously important for me, enormously useful, and therefore probably for many of your other listeners as well. Thanks so much, guys. Wish me luck with the conversation with my wife, and thank you so much for all the content. Please keep it coming. Thank you.
Kevin, thank you so much for the voicemail. I just absolutely loved it. I mean, the quotes in there, it makes me feel good to listen to the podcast and this mental place where I want to aim for self-improvement. I absolutely love that. That is the best feedback that I could receive because that's really, we're trying to make this something that's relatable. We're trying to just tell our stories, tell the stories of people in this community of just how we're living a little bit more optimized. As we say over and over again, we're not doing anything crazy. We're not these weird misers who are just trying to save money at the expense of everything else. No, it's the opposite of that. I reject that entirely. It's about living this wonderful, optimized life of abundance. And I think, honestly, you've got your answer on how you convince your wife right there, just in your own mindset. I mean, I'm sure she sees it. I'm sure she sees this change in you. And you start talking about plans you guys can have together, how you can work as a team, like so many of the couples that have come on our show previously have talked about, like making this a fun game where they can win at life and reclaim these decades. That's the answer to me. I think you have it right there. So wonderful stuff, Kevin. Thank you for listening. And yeah, I really appreciate it.
And just to tie on to that, I'm pretty sure that my wife sometimes still thinks I'm crazy, especially when I start talking, like diving into the tax optimization, you know, nerd stuff. And I love it. Like that's who I am. But I think what has won her over, her heart on this, her placement on this, is the tangible benefits for our life together. I am home throughout the day, present with my son, throughout the day. We have breakfast together and then I go do some work from home if that's what I'm working on. And then we get lunch together. We take a walk around the block together. We go grocery shopping together. Our activity, we live our lives out in front of each other. We don't just intersect randomly, you know, at particular points and times, like maybe a day on the weekend and maybe an hour at night. That's what FI enables. It enables a lifestyle by design that allows you to spend more time with the people that you love. What is not to buy into about that? I think that for her, if I try to sell her on the Roth conversion ladder, she went to sleep 5 minutes ago. If I try to sell her on why we should be using a low-cost index fund and why it is the single path to wealth, right? I lost her an hour ago. But if we talk about lifestyle by design that allows me to be more present and to us to spend more time both with each other and with the people that we love, that is a message that carries throughout the day.
Yeah. And to Kevin's other point about properties, I think that's something, Jonathan, you and I kind of floated a number of months ago. And that is something we intend to pursue for sure and purchase a property maybe together. Or also Frank, who listens to the show, has expressed an interest in joining us in that endeavor, basically. And I think to Kevin's point, there's that trust and there's no vested interest. We would never try to sell anything, or we're not going to put together some crazy investment vehicle. We're just going to chronicle this because, Jonathan, you and I are not real estate investors, but I think we both aspire to be on some level, right? And that might look different for each of us, or it might look different a year or two from now. We have no idea, but I think it's something that intrigues both of us. So I think that would be valuable for the audience to see us go through that and to see what kind of questions we're asking, what we decide to buy, what we decide to pass on, and basically our successes and failures, because undoubtedly there will be both.
I know Frank's listening to this. Yes, man, we need to get in touch with you. We're gonna set that up and hop on a call to figure out what it'll look like. Yeah, even more than I would say, I would go so far as to say that I know our hearts are in the right place on this because we really don't want to do it, do we, Brad? Like, we, at the end of the day, neither of us have any interest in real estate whatsoever, but it's a missing piece of the puzzle. And it's one that, like he pointed out, is so valuable for people. And yes, you can make a ton of money, but you can also lose your shirt. In fact, Brad, you have lost your shirt, you know, on a real estate deal. And so doing it right, we can't just ignore this. This is one of the major vehicles. If there's three major vehicles, three lanes, there's, you know, investments, so paper assets, there is the real estate class, and there's building a business. We can't just skip it just because our bias would be to business building and paper assets. We can't just skip this. It's an important part of the conversation. And so we're trying to go back to that and be better at it, figure out what it is that we don't know and learn how to do it and to show other people what we have done to demonstrate it. And I love that he labeled that trust is the currency. That goes back to the beginning of this episode. Our relationship with you, the listener, with the audience is everything. That's why we try to be so transparent with both how we're monetizing and what we're trying to attempt. It is absolutely the core of this message is trust. All right, guys. Well, unfortunately, that is going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. And there are three books that we normally offer. One is J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth. The other is Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future. And the third book is Vincent Puglisi's book, Freelance to Freedom. If you want to enter that drawing, all you need to do, just go to chooseify.com/iTunes, follow the written instructions there, leave us a short written review, and then send us an email to feedback@chooseify.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. If you don't use iTunes, but you do use Stitcher, you can go to that same page and there will be a link to Stitcher as well. You can leave a review there and also enter the drawing. We give away one book for every five written reviews that we get, and we announce the winner on the Friday roundup. And Brad, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan, we have one winner today, and the winner is Ginger. And she said, the fire is spreading. Chooseify is rapidly becoming my favorite personal finance and overall life optimization podcast. My path to FI began in minimalism, detoured to Dave Ramsey, and has now landed on the FIRE mindset. Jonathan and Brad share their own journeys with humility and grace. I initially thought I needed the simplicity and one-size-fits-all approach of Dave Ramsey's dogma. Luckily, Brad and Jonathan's gentle voices and unflappable enthusiasm have shown me that digging a little bit deeper and optimizing personal finance is not only doable, it's actually fun. And most importantly, they recommend the best board games. Pandemic, anyone?
It is such a solid one. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It will be an affiliate link. All right, guys, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.